Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show. Conservative news and commentary addressing the issues that concern you here on the BBS radio and television network. As I've mentioned on our last program, dramatic events associated with the U.S.-Israel-Iran war are occurring daily now, and it's difficult to complete a program recording and be up to date with these events that are profoundly affecting the world. As we complete this program toward the end of the week ending April 11, 2026, the U.S. has announced a ceasefire prior to negotiations beginning between the U.S. and Iran, or at least one segment of competing governmental Iranian factions, to begin on April 10 or 11 and hosted by Pakistan. The next day after the ceasefire announcement, the U.S. financial markets rose strongly on hopes and expectations for an end to the conflict and an end to disruption in the world's energy supply chain through the Strait of Hormuz, which has been controlled by Iran. Problem is, nobody seems clear on just what is happening with this fragile ceasefire, which was supposed to lead to the reopening of the strait and resumption of oil shipments through it. Ceasefires are notoriously difficult to establish and often take some time to become fully operational, and the situation in the Middle East is no exception. With Israel continuing attacks on the Iranian regime's proxy Hezbollah in Lebanon, as well as on Iran itself, while what's left of the Iranian regime has split into a so-called mosaic strategy with governmental factions operating independently and continuing attacks on Israel and the Gulf states. As I understand it, the U.S. and Iranian negotiators have quite different sets of demands they want to bring to negotiations, with some factions in Iran refusing to accept any negotiations at all. Still, I have to agree with the Trump administration that these latest developments in the war are indeed overall positive and indicative of more established positive developments in the near future. As I've said several times now, I have fully supported President Trump and his team's positions in this conflict, despite prominent commentators such as Alex Jones and Tucker Carlson, these are conservatives, mind you, being dead against the Trump administration's actions. I don't know what's happened with Alex Jones over the Iran conflict. Alex Jones, longtime conspiracy theorist and nemesis of the political left, has been right about so much he has talked about over the years. But he's, in my opinion, got off the rails with his steadfast and dramatic opposition to our nation's attacks and strategic goals in Iran. I have continued watching brief segments of the Alex Jones Show daily on his website, Infowars.com, X.com, and Rumble.com, but I am in all but complete disagreement with him on this matter. Day after day, Jones hammers on his points that everything with the war against the fanatical and monstrously evil regime in Iran is wrong, wrong, wrong. Israel is subverting the U.S. and tricking into attacking Iran, according to Jones. We cannot win against the mullahs. The ceasefire is a sham and has already failed, and on and on Jones goes. I don't doubt there's truth in some of his assertions, such as that Israel wields great influence over the U.S. with its lobbying, spying, and supporters in this country. After all, Israel has a lot to lose if it loses U.S. support. But I firmly believe that we have key interests in conducting this war, independent of helping our powerful Middle East ally, Israel. From what I've seen, it's obvious the murderous mullahs were sparing no expense in a feverish campaign to develop and probably use or threaten to use nuclear weapons. They had built and they have built and were continuing to build gigantic what's been called missile cities deep underground in the mountains of Iran, where they were producing, storing, and in some cases firing from a variety of locations their most advanced missiles and drones. They have long traded, in violation of U.S. sanctions, cheap oil to their masters in the Chinese Communist Party in exchange for cash and components for their weapons, as well as complete weapon systems for air defense and the like. Now, it's turned out these haven't been that effective, but as far as I'm concerned, the U.S. really had no choice but to go in, dismantle, and destroy Iran's nuclear and other war-making powers and ultimately destroy the murderous and fanatical Iranian mullah regime and its proxies. And of course, Iran, the Iranian regime itself, has long been a major proxy of our friends, the Communist Chinese Party. If we succeed in these goals, I believe the world will ultimately be a much safer and more prosperous place for all. One of my favorite conservative commentators has been Dr. Steve Turley. Here is a recent podcast posted by Turley on his YouTube channel talking about what is going on with the ceasefire, if it is a ceasefire at all, and what Turley sees as Trump's brilliant strategy with these negotiations. As I've said before, Dr. Turley always puts a positive spin on his commentary and reporting, and I think one has to take this into consideration in viewing his podcast shows, but his insights and research abilities are truly remarkable.
We're now getting a front row seat on Trump's astonishingly brilliant strategy behind the ceasefire, and it's playing out in real time. Something extraordinary is happening inside the Islamic Republic of Iran right now, and almost nobody in the legacy media understands it. In fact, what's being called a failed ceasefire, or what's being called confusion, or what's being called chaos, is actually, and I want you to hear this very carefully, deliberate. The chaos is the strategy. And once you understand that, everything Trump is doing makes perfect sense. Stick with me to the very end of this video because I'm going to show you a masterclass in geopolitical strategy, and we're going to see how Trump is publicly humiliating NATO and causing our so-called European allies to absolutely panic. Hey gang, it's me, Dr. Steve, your patron professor, here to help you make sense of the madness with breaking news and analysis. You're not going to get anywhere else, so you know what to do. Make sure to smack that bell and subscribe button. Vice President J.D. Vance is preparing to lead the U.S. delegation in high-stakes peace talks with Iran in Islamabad, Pakistan on Saturday. It will, in fact, be the highest-level direct engagement between the United States and Iran since the 1979 Islamic Revolution. Vance will be joined by Special Envoy Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner, while Iran's Parliament Speaker Mohammad Ghalibaf and Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi are expected to lead Tehran's side. This Iranian delegation, however, is actually begging a larger question. Who, in fact, is actually leading Iran? One of the things that's becoming increasingly clear here with the ceasefire is the fact that there is no actual ceasefire, at least not in the conventional formal sense. As many of you know, Iran has continued to launch missiles at both Israel and the Gulf states since the supposed ceasefire began, and we're learning that this is because Iran no longer has an actual functioning government. Again, they're putting on the face of a functioning government with these talks, with their delegation, but the reality is that the regime is now visibly splitting along fault lines that have been building for years. And the fracture is actually accelerating faster than anyone predicted. Here's what's actually happening on the ground. According to multiple regional intelligence sources, more than 50 senior Iranian officials, commanders, strategic advisors, the backbone of the inner circle, have been eliminated across a series of coordinated precision operations. And those who remain, they've stopped meeting in large groups together. They've tightened communications. They've largely siloed off their communications into splinter groups. And it's because they're terrified of strikes. And again, this siloing, this fracturing of the leadership was very deliberate on the part of Trump and the Israeli forces. The organizational backbone of the Islamic Republic has been dramatically thinned. And now, the regime that once spoke with one terrifying voice is speaking with many fractured, contradictory, competing voices. Remember, we've been talking a lot about the so-called Mosaic Doctrine. It's a decentralized defense doctrine that allows the IRGC to split up into 31 largely independent regiments in the case that their top leadership gets wiped out. So the Mosaic gives provincial commanders the authority to act autonomously without waiting for Tehran's approval. But its Achilles heel, as we're seeing, is that it's nearly impossible for them to act in a unified and coordinated manner, since so much of their command and control and communications capabilities have been wiped out. So that's why we're seeing these very sporadic, contradictory messages and launches and the like. There isn't a single government running things in Iran. The regime has been splintered into various factions. And so this is where analysts like Rod Martin and Mayar Tusi and others are noting a crucial insight here. Trump is not negotiating with Iran, quote unquote. He's not negotiating with a single regime. He's negotiating with one of the larger factions, right? There are lots of factions. Some estimate there are 31 factions. Some estimate there are 24. And of course, not all of them want peace. Not all of them even want to negotiate. Again, that begs the question, what is Trump actually doing here then with this ceasefire? Bottom line, Trump is effectively pitting these factions against each other. Full stop. He's making competing offers of money, power, and security to different factions and watching what happens next. Because here's the game. If one faction betrays another, they take care of the bad actor for Trump without a single American bomb being dropped. And if they don't take care of it, Trump will randomly target them again and blame them all as if there's still one unified government, which will, of course, only serve to infuriate them and cause them to turn on each other, precisely because there is no longer a central authority to prevent that internal war. It's absolutely brilliant. So on one side, you know, if we were to just create, like, say, two sides here, on one side, you got the diplomatic establishment. They're led by President Pezeshkian, who want a deal. They want to end this thing. They want to establish diplomatic relations with the United States and the regional Gulf countries. But they're being thwarted by another side, the more hardline IRGC factions, who are giving 72-hour ultimatums for the diplomatic faction to retract any and all proposals for peace. They're calling those who want a diplomatic resolution collaborators with the enemy. They're collaborators with the Zionists. And they're threatening to eliminate them. Right? This is one faction of the Iranian government threatening to destroy another faction of the Iranian government without the United States or Israel having to drop a single bomb. This is exactly what a number of analysts are telling us to watch for. The factions are turning on each other in real time, publicly. And so for those who think this is chaos, it isn't. What we're watching is actually very controlled, very deliberate, very engineered disintegration of a 47-year-old theocratic regime, faction by faction, commander by commander, institution by institution. And it's not just a...
Turley goes on in that same podcast show to comment on what he believes is President Trump's strategy against the NATO nations, who have famously failed to provide any significant military assistance in the war against Iran, even though those nations are the primary beneficiaries of the oil supply chain through the Strait of Hormuz. Turley believes Trump is going to cut back on support for NATO over this, but due to time constraints, I didn't include Turley's NATO narrative. You can watch it on his channel if you want to. Moving on today, another one of my favorite podcasters on YouTube is Brian Maxwell and his Real Politics shows there. You may have heard and seen last year an interview with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, in which Zelensky denies that Ukraine ever received some $177 billion in military aid from the U.S., which is what the corrupt and illegitimate Biden administration has claimed. Zelensky claimed that Ukraine only received about $75 billion of this aid. And of course, ultimately, Trump has said Ukraine received something like $350 billion in U.S. aid altogether, but we're talking about military aid here, I believe. This Maxwell podcast show is about recent developments and disclosures which help explain where this missing $100 billion went, in my opinion. It goes over the corrupt and communist-leaning Democrats' dark money networks and financial schemes. So let's go ahead and watch the video.
Tegnap kiderült, hogy Zelenszky elnök az amerikai elnök választáson az ukrán barát elnöknek juttatott pénzt Donald Trump-al szemben. Vagyis ukrán pénzből támogatták a demokraták kampányát. Ugyan ezt teszik most Magyarországon. Ukrán barát kormányt akarnak, ukrán ügynököket küldenek, az ukrán barát ellenzéknek segítenek. Az ukrán aranykonvoj ügyében folytatott nyomozás azt is felderítette, hogy nem csak nyugatról áramlott Ukrajnába a pénz, hanem visszafelé is. Vagyis az elszegényedett Ukrajnából folyamatosan szállítottak dollár milliárdokat Magyarországon keresztül nyugatra. Azt is tudjuk, hogy a pénzek nagy részét átutalták Amerikába. Zelenszky elnöknek semmi sem drága, ukrán arannyal és dollárral fizet azoknak, akik hajlandók támogatni Ukrajna háborúját. Magyarországon itt ennek véget vetünk.
Woo, all right, we got a bombshell that just dropped. And while people saying, oh, what is the Trump administration doing? When are they going to hold people accountable? We're seeing it happen in real time. And folks saying, well, why haven't we seen any of the big fish going to jail yet? Is because there were 232 federal prosecutors that were brought in under the Biden administration, strategically placed throughout the country. And what they've been doing is acting like activists in robes, doing everything they can to block people that were within that administration and within the Obama administration, trying to block from keeping them from going to prison, getting in trouble and being held accountable. And what the Trump administration is doing is very wisely planning it. They're getting them, putting them on the record, getting them under oath, and exposing it to the people where the public opinion helps influence these radical judges. Not to mention, they're at the right. The Republicans have judges strategically around, too. And boy, they've been taking these cases on, but the lamestream media has been refusing to broadcast it and play it because they know the ramifications of the American people knowing what's really been going on will just put that final nail in the Democrats' coffin. Because they're using propaganda on steroids to try to keep this party afloat. And with this new news break, this is not helping them at all. Because what Tulsi Gabbard, the director of national intelligence, has exposed is that the Ukrainian government was taking the taxpayer dollars that were being sent to them by the Americas, by America, you know, of course, on behalf of the Democrats, and was redirecting it back, funneling it into the Democratic Party, into the Democratic National Committee, and to fund the Joe Biden campaign. Maybe the reason why Scamala had that $2.5 billion. So in this video, you're going to hear from Zelensky. You're going to hear exactly what happened. You're also going to hear from Sleepy Creepy Piss Pants Joe. And it's going to lay out. But wait until you hear how Biden's advisor was brought under oath and what he exposed. Then you may say, well, Brian, Biden's gone. Why is this important? It's because just because Biden's gone as the figurehead, they still were doing it, and now they have been busted. Now we understand why the Democrats lost their mind when USAID was crippled by DOGE. We see now why they're going crazy about trying to get President Trump by any means necessary, because he knew what was happening. He got the briefing, but they took him out of power. They smeared his name so bad to where people on the left and even some weaklings on the right, oh, you know, Trump is this. Everything is blamed on Trump. Oh, and you got these black pillars spreading like Tucker Carlson, like Candace Owens, who are nothing more than paid shields. They thought that they can put into the center of MAGA, detonate it, and make MAGA explode. Not happening. Not only is MAGA getting stronger, MAGA's literally bigger now than it was when President Trump took office in 2024. And it's going to get even bigger on the heels of things like this breaking. So check this out. Explosive intel report. Ukraine war aid may have been funneled to the Biden campaign. And I'm going to get back to that article. But the first clip I want you to listen to, I want you to listen to Mike Donilon, who was Joe Biden's closest advisor. Listen to what he says under oath, because these folks are being held accountable, folks. Just because the lamestream media isn't broadcasting it, it's happening. And I'm going to keep bringing it to you. But check this out.
Just to be clear, would the amount of pay you received for your role on the campaign, would that have changed depending on how far into the race President Biden made it?
My sense is that that In my view, the money was that it was a guarantee. I can't back that we had a negotiation, and that's my memory of the agreement.
When I received a bonus, depending on the way the campaign went, was that a possibility?
How the campaign went.
Were there any circumstances in which you would have received a bonus?
Yes, it was.
What were those circumstances?
That Joe Biden would have been re-elected president, I said.
What was the bonus of Biden?
I believe it would have been $4 million.
In addition to the $4 million.
And y'all, while we talking about all this fraud and expising the Democrat Party, do me a solid. If you're enjoying this video, and only if you're enjoying it, would you hit that like button or hit that hype button? And here's why. YouTube loves to know that people are enjoying the video and that they're seeing engagement in the comment section. So leave a comment. Tell me what you think about the video. Do you agree or disagree? Hit the like button or the hype button. It really helps, because when YouTube sees that, they say, oh, this video is good, and they'll spread it and they'll promote it all across the YouTube platform. So it really helps. And if you're not subscribed to the channel, subscribe. Now I'm gonna get back to the video. Thank you. Did you hear that? So this man, they're talking about how the money was being funneled in, and Donilon was paid $4 million to say, hey, Joe Biden's cool and support all of these things. And if Joe Biden would have got reelected, he was guaranteed a bonus of another $4 million. All to prop up the lie while the big steal was taking place. And now we can't forget about this. I'm sure you've seen this before, but I'd be doing you a disservice if I didn't play it for you. This here was in 2017. Listen to Joe Biden as he talks about his visit to Ukraine, to Kyiv specifically.
I remember going over, convincing our team, our others, to convincing us that we should be providing for loan guarantees. And I went over, I guess, the 12th, 13th time to Kyiv, and I was supposed to announce that there was another $1 billion loan guarantee. And I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to the press conference, and I said, we're not going to give you the $1 billion.
Now, remember, the prosecutor you're talking about is the person that was investigating the gas company that Hunter Biden ended up being put on the board of. What was the name of that energy company there in Ukraine? It slips my mind, but it was a huge investigation that was going on into this energy company. And that state prosecutor was on the heels exposing the fraud, exposing everything. And Joe Biden goes over there to Ukraine, to Kyiv specifically, speaking to the Ukrainian government. And this is what he's speaking about. So that prosecutor was investigating the corruption. And it starts with a B. Oh, my God, I'm sure it'll come to me. If you know the name of that, please put it in the comments. The name of the Burisma. It was Burisma. They were investigating the corruption of Burisma, and Joe Biden wasn't happy with that. And then after what he's going to say here, they put Hunter Biden, who had no energy experience, who had no foreign diplomat experience, and wasn't registered under FARA, under the Foreign Agents Act. But this is what Joe Biden is talking about. So the state prosecutor was investigating the corruption of a company that was kicking money back, and this is what he's explaining he did.
They said, you have no authority. You're not the president. The president said, I said, call him. I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. And I think it was, 6 hours? I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Oh, son of a bitch. Got fired. And they put in place someone who was solid.
Now, what does that mean to put in place somebody who was solid? Now, here's what the groundbreaking news has been with Tulsi Gabbard exposed. Check this out. On the heels of all,
as we've gone through the weaponization story over the last decade, it was all about prosecuting and ruining people's lives. But we're now getting a sense that maybe Democrats were working with foreign powers to have them interfere in our election. We got a little bit of this a couple weeks ago with the China stuff, the FBI finding these driver's licenses, China, and the sources the FBI had saying that the goal of those licenses were to get fake ballots to vote for Joe Biden in the 2020 election. This morning, thanks to the National Security Agency, and Tulsi Gabbard, the DNI, they declassified an intercept report. Our government intercepted the Ukrainian government talking about a plot with our own workers, meaning people that work for USAID, the State Department Foreign Aid Agency, to route hundreds of millions of dollars to Ukraine, our money,
taxpayer money.
Yep. It goes there, and then they're going to route it and launder it back in the United States and put it in Joe Biden's 2024 campaign coffers.
It was always interesting why Joe Biden was so interested in Ukraine. Also, so many lawmakers were very interested. I mean, let's call it.
On the Democratic side.
And some Republicans.
Yeah,
Lindsey Graham spent a lot of time in Ukraine.
That's right.
And it was always, why? What's the hook? And you couldn't put two and two together. Some people thought lawmakers were trying to get money back into their districts through Ukraine's USAID. Into Ukraine, money back into these lawmakers' districts, which turns into donations.
That's right.
But it was just very, very odd why. And I was on a network before I came here who would not let me call out that exact phenomenon.
Isn't that amazing?
And I'm just wondering if there was maybe some of that funds going back into that network as well. Who knows? But that's speculation. But this goes on, though. This how big is it?
Well, the intercept is absolutely clear. There's a lot of detail in the intercept of who did what. What Tulsi Gabbard has done is asked the head of USAID, go look for the emails and the evidence. If you find this grant occurring, let's get it to the FBI and start a prosecution. So this has just happened in the last 24 hours, so it's still unfolding. But the declassification, everybody can read the document. It's pretty stunning. I mean, it's a pretty complicated plot. Move the money multiple times. Get it into Americans' hands. Americans have converted to Joe Biden.
Question.
Yep.
USAID.
Yep.
Still operating?
It is, but about one-fourth the size. I mean,
still one-fourth.
Very small amount of money, though. A couple $1 billion compared to about $12 billion here. I know it's funny to say a couple billion small, but it used to be about $12 billion.
That's taxpayer money.
It is money.
It is insane. Yeah. And I know Trump tried to shut the whole thing down, and then they pushed him not to.
They did.
So as you just heard, they intercepted and Tulsi Gabbard declassified how during the Biden administration, intelligence agencies intercepted correspondence between Ukraine and American workers, American people within government of the plot to take the monies that we were kicking over to Ukraine for the quote unquote war efforts and how they were going to maneuver it, move it around to different shell companies, funnel it back into people's hands that were then going to use it to go to Joe Biden. And if you remember when Kamala Harris took over, she had a chest of money of about $1.5 billion that ballooned up, the highest ever collected in the history of campaigns, period. I think probably in the world, $1.5 billion, which ballooned up to $2.5 billion because they just pulled another $1 billion from some weird super PAC who gave $1 billion to this woman. And that's one of the reasons why she was the only person who could step in and run, because legally no other candidate would have been able to step in and utilize donations that had went to the Biden campaign, except his running mate, because the campaigns came in for both because she was on the ticket. So that's why they knew they didn't want her. They tried to replace her. If you remember a year earlier, they didn't want this woman. But look at what happened. That's how they got that chest of money. So they intercepted that correspondence showing that manipulation and fraud was taking place. The Biden administration swept it under the rug. But one thing these intelligence agencies don't do, for whatever reason, maybe they're unable to do, it's illegal. And luckily for us, they stash these documents. Sometimes they move them into weird places where it makes it that much harder to find, but they found it. And Tulsi Gabbard declassified it. So now they've already got things going already for prosecutions. This just broke on like Friday, like the 25th. This is when this all came out, 25th of March. So this is new, folks. And check your cable news networks and see how many of them are speaking about it. So when you wonder, why is it that these prosecutions aren't happening? Why aren't we getting any of the big fish? Can you imagine trying to prosecute Tim Walz in Minnesota where their local news media acts like he's the victim? And guess where the jury pool comes from? That pool of people. And nothing would be worse than to bring him up on a prosecution and him being acquitted. But what they found is that Minnesota does have conservative judges. But what they have to do is make sure that the evidence is so overwhelming when it comes to people like a Walz or like a John Brennan. Now, all of the other prosecutions of the judges, of the congresswoman that just got found guilty, of all types of things that's happening, the lamestream media just isn't covering it. But it's happening, y'all. And this is going to send some people to prison.
Lastly today, here are our final two video clips. They have to do with the massive, what appears to be ultimately, totaling up to hundreds of billions of dollars in fraud being perpetrated on U.S. taxpayers under the supreme leader of Califradia, as it's been called, far-left Governor Gavin Newsom, and the communist Democrats controlling that state. The first clip is from a recent edition of conservative commentator Mark Levin's Life, Liberty, and Levin show on Fox, with an interview of recently Trump-endorsed California gubernatorial Republican candidate Steve Hilton. The second clip is a segment from another recent podcast by California legislator Carl DeMeo, discussing the Gavin Newsom empire of fraud in which the communist Democrats squander billions in taxpayer dollars to help themselves get and hold political power.
Hello, America. Welcome back. We're here with our friend Steve Hilton, who's running for governor of California and has a real shot at this. And Steve, you're a good man. You're solid. You're very ethical. And you're very articulate about matters of principle and so forth. California is the place people used to want to go to. And now it's the place where people are leaving in droves. At least citizens are. As are businesses. You're having a vote coming out on this wealth tax so people can't get out of there fast enough. You have a governor who can't get water to fire hydrants. You've got a governor that spends all day on the internet with his staff and so forth. But you also have a state there, which Chris Ruffo with the City Journal Manhattan Institute has reported, virtually 25% of every state program is filled with fraud. Number one, what is your comment on that? And number two, what has Newsom's response been to that?
Well, first of all, that is exactly in line with other investigations, including ones that we've done. I spoke to Chris Ruffo. He's doing fantastic work, as are many others. Nick Shirley, Dr. Oz, now the vice president with the Fraud Task Force. So many people now are focusing on this because we are the biggest state with the biggest budget and the biggest fraud and corruption. So if you look at the central question Californians are asking, which is, how is it possible that we pay the highest taxes in the country for the worst results? The homelessness, the schools are a disaster. We have the highest cost of living, the highest poverty rate, the highest unemployment rate. And yet we pay with the worst roads in the country, even though we have the highest gas tax. Well, now we see the answer. Fraud and corruption on an epic scale after 16 years of one-party rule by a corrupt Democrat regime. And so if you look at the details, we just published a report with my organization I set up as part of my campaign, CalDoge, modeled on the president's work, of course, at the federal level. We just published a report that over the last 5 years in California, if you look at publicly available data, the bill, the total cost is $22,000 per taxpayer. Just gone. I mean, it's just an epic scale. And so we've got to shut this down. And the Newsom response is to smear people who are trying to do this, to deny it, to deflect, to pretend that he's already dealt with it. He is so full of it. And this fraud issue is one of the number one reasons we can never let that man anywhere near the White House.
I mean, the report talks about tens of billions, over $100 billion in fraud, 25% of every one of these government programs in California. You know, Harry Truman used to have a little plaque on his desk that says the buck stops here. Apparently the buck does stop with Newsom, and then 25% of it goes into a Never Never Land or his friends or what, or something of that sort. Do you think somebody can launch some kind of a criminal investigation into this? I've never seen anything like this.
Well, I will when I'm governor, but let me give you an example to show you where it's going. So this is our second fraud report at CalDoge just a few weeks ago. This is $1 billion that was supposed to have been spent on installing solar panels on low-income apartment buildings as part of their insane climate agenda. So it's supposed to be $100 million every year for 10 years, starting in 2015. We looked at the books. Of the $1 billion total, the amount that was actually spent on solar panels, $72 million. $928 million, nearly all of it, was diverted to Democrat activist groups doing voter registration and all the rest of it. Taxpayer money. This is how they finance their machine. That's what's been going on here. It's going to build the Democrat political machine. So, yes, there will be prosecutions when I'm elected governor and my attorney general running mate, Michael Gates, will go after these people, prosecute them and get the money back.
I mean, in addition to utter incompetence and laziness and disinterest, which I think defines the nature of this governor, Newsom, we have out and out fraud. And the guy could care less. He's traveling overseas. He's traveling to other states. He's hanging around on the internet. Honestly, I'd like to know what the hell this guy does 10, 12 hours a day as governor.
Breaking news in the fight against fraud against taxpayers in California. We finally have people getting indicted by the Trump Department of Justice. Coming up, we'll tell you who got indicted, what programs they defrauded, and the lingering question. Will California Governor Gavin Newsom and California Democrat politicians responsible for the fraud ever be held accountable? Coming up, we've got complete developing coverage of the fraud scandals emerging in the state of California. California politicians are benefiting from the high level of fraud against taxpayers in the state of California. And there's two reasons why they benefit, and I'm going to tell you about it. I'm Carl DeMaio, chairman of Reform California and a California state representative, and it's finally happening, my friends. We've been pulling the string on this ragged, ratchety sweater, and it's finally coming completely apart. The fraud, epic levels of fraud against taxpayers, your money being stolen, finally coming to light in California. Not because the liberal media has been shining a light on the problem or kicking the tires, but because citizen journalists, watchdogs, whistleblowers have stepped forward to basically state the obvious, pointing out what's been going on for years. Taxpayers have been absolutely fleeced, victimized by fraudsters, and California Democrat politicians, they've enabled it. They've actually built this fraud system, the machine, the fraud machine in California at your expense. And it's all because the politicians themselves directly benefit. We're gonna walk through all of it because we finally have indictments, federal criminal indictments, to hold some of these fraudsters accountable. But by no means are we getting the real culprits. Those are the politicians, the ringleaders. So I'm going to tell you who got indicted. I'm going to tell you why there's others that need to be really worried about legal exposure that they have, where the fraud is coming from, what programs we're seeing the most fraud in, and how much it's costing you, the taxpayer, and how politicians in Sacramento are actually trying to decriminalize various forms of fraud and make it easier for people to fleece you. Before we get into that, I need your help. Remember, none of this work happens without you, the citizens rising up and demanding change and accountability in California. Reform California is leading that fight. There's two ways we do it. First, we provide investigations and news on what's actually going on. It's not like the liberal media is going to do it. So help us support this podcast as well as our ongoing investigations. A lot of the news that we provide is available on our website, reformcalifornia.org. Another way you can help support our news, subscribe to this channel and like this video. It helps the algorithm and spreads the word. Also, go to that website, reformcalifornia.org, because we're not just a news source. We are an ongoing grassroots campaign. Oh yeah, we recruit, back, endorse, and support candidates for all sorts of offices, local office from city council and judgeships, all the way up to the state house, state assembly, state senate, to break the Democrats' control of our government, to hold these politicians accountable. We also are working on important ballot measures like voter ID and Save Prop 13. All those campaigns and our voter guide, all available at that website, reformcalifornia.org. While you're there, please sign up at the bottom of the website and we will send you our plain English voter guide in time for the election. We give you a plain English description of what each ballot measure does and where the hidden tax increases are. Remember, the politicians put false and deceptive titles on these ballot measures to scam you. So your plain English voter guide is the most important tool we give voters to make sure they know what they're voting on. Plus, we do endorsements in the judge races, school board races, all sorts of candidate races. So you know who the real fighters are, the change agents. But you're not going to get the voter guide unless you sign up. We don't sell information. We don't share information. It's all part of the campaign that we're building statewide. So tether yourself in. Go to the bottom of the website at reformcalifornia.org. First name, last name, email, phone, and zip code, and you will get the plain English voter guide. Let's get right into it. The fraud crisis in the state of California. So this week, Herb Morgan, who's running for California State Comptroller, joined Steve Hilton and the folks at Doge California, the project that they've got. Remember, we've got our own Doge California at my assembly office. All of us are working together, parallel tracks, coordinated tracks, but it's all to shine a light on government. Herb Morgan held a press conference to say, look, there's an exposure for fraud of $312 to $425 billion of fraud, whether it's unemployment insurance, $55 billion, Medi-Cal, $95 to $115 billion. And this is over a period of 5 years. CalFresh, $20 to $25 billion. That's the food stamp program. Homelessness programs, $20 to $25 billion. The list goes on and on. You can see it there. $312 to $425 billion. Newsom dismissed this as, these are estimates. Yeah, at least someone's trying to estimate your problem. You're not doing anything about it. You're just making it worse. You're not cracking down on fraud. He's like, oh, right-wing chatter. It's not really happening. These are estimates. Even if Herb Morgan is right 10%, that is $30 to $42.5 billion. In taxpayer money being fleeced and defrauded. This is important, okay? We're not talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars. We're talking about not even millions, billions of dollars. And yet Newsom's like, ah, estimates. Well, at least someone's shining a light and trying to get a sense of how bad of a job you're doing running these programs. But our friends at City Journal, Chris Rufo, is out with a report, Gavin Newsom's Empire of Fraud. And he actually has actual proven fraud rates, $180 billion of fraud, just under Gavin Newsom's time in office. This is staggering. This is an entirety of a state budget. And by the way, speaking of the state budget, when Newsom took over, Newsom's budget was about $180 billion in 2019. Now it's $300 billion. Population hasn't increased. We've actually lost population to other states. But we're spending almost double to run this state. And a lot of that's going out in the form of direct aid payments through welfare and contracts and grants with no justification. We're being fleeced. And I want you to go check out the report. It's at city-journal.org. It goes into great detail. But let me give you the highlights or the lowlights of what's going on. And then we're going to get into the prosecutions, the indictments, and this new bill in Sacramento that politicians have to decriminalize fraud, to make it impossible to charge people with a crime if they steal up to $25,000. The new concept is we'll let them steal up to $25,000 in the state of California, and it's not a crime anymore. You can't make this crap up. So anyway, we go through some of the programs. Some of the programs that they're identifying. Well, let's go back to the Herb Morgan list because he actually has a list of them. Unemployment insurance, $30 billion documented. And that includes 133 inmates on death row that actually got unemployment benefits issued to them by Gavin Newsom. Food stamps. We have a food stamp fraud rate that is double the national average. We also have this chart showing various states on food stamps. This is actual identified fraudulent payments. California has 25,815 in just the first quarter of 2025. You might say, well, we have a lot of people, Carl. South Dakota had zero. Iowa, only 82. Missouri, 595, compared to 25,818. We're talking about massive numbers of fraud rates. And that's only documented fraud. A lot of fraud is not detected in people who are not eligible going on to get benefits. But Gavin Newsom doesn't care. And I'll tell you why in just a moment. So food stamp fraud. Then we've got homelessness programs. $18 billion is what he spent in his first 4 years. We're now up to nearly $30 billion as we approach, year eight. He's going from year seven to year eight. $30 billion. Where is that money going? Well, he doesn't want an audit. Homelessness is worse. And we're finding $1 million per unit homeless projects, public housing projects all throughout the state of California. Massively over budget. Story after story of not only development projects, but hotel rooms for $6,500 per month per homeless person. It's not even being an eye batted at it. We're talking about billions of dollars in fraud, mainly going to developers and motel owners across the state. They're not paying substance abuse counselors or mental health therapists to get to the root cause of homelessness. No, they're giving it to developers and motel owners. In a moment, we'll go on and give you the reason why. There's a very clear reason why. All of these programs have a feedback loop so that the politicians benefit from the fraud. Home health, let me give you this one. Home health is a program that is so fraud-ridden. It's called In-Home Supportive Services, IHSS. It's paid for by Medi-Cal. And Schwarzenegger, back in 2009, said he thought, according to his department estimate, 25% of the payments were fraudulent, one out of four. What is home health? They pay relatives to care for their family members as state government workers. And in fact, 800,000 IHSS jobs now exist in the state budget. It is the largest job category in the entire state of California. And 41% of the, quote, job gains for Gavin Newsom came from this government program alone. Oh, yeah, he's creating government jobs, but he's destroying private sector jobs. We've had private sector job losses under him. The only place where we've had gains has been the size and scope of government.
That's all for our show today. As always, we hope you found today's content of interest and value. You can watch and or listen to a podcast of today's show when it's posted shortly here on the Jim Benson Show pages at bbsradio.com/The Jim Benson Show. And elsewhere on the internet, including x.com at jamesb50309177. Also on rumble.com and Apple Podcasts. While you're at it, if you visit my pages here at bbsradio.com, scroll down on my index page at bbsradio.com/The Jim Benson Show and check out our related videos section. Look for us again 2 weeks from today in this same time slot with another episode of the show. And have a great rest of your day and evening.